Welcome to the BitBend Indie Games Podcast with your hosts, Chris and Kevin, your source for all things indie games.
Hello and welcome to the BitBend Podcast, episode 1. I am Christopher Puner, and with me...
Kevin Schachschneider.
Seeing as this is episode 1, I feel as though a little explanation is in order about what we're doing here and who we are and things that we're planning on doing and all that jazz. So we are a indie games podcast, and what that means is that we're going to talk about indie games, our thoughts about them, some news about them, discussing your guys' thoughts about them. I don't know, you want to add anything, Kevin?
We're going to cover some stuff like, you know, just the engines and stories behind the developers too, just in case you're like maybe like aspiring to kind of create or break into this market yourself a little bit, and do some reviews too, so that when you may see these games on sale or something like that, you have an idea of whether or not you are interested in them actually.
Right. So we'll let you know what our opinions are. Just so you know, a little bit of background knowledge about both of us. We've both been playing video games for a really long time. Pretty much as long as I can remember, I've been playing video games. And we've also done some previous video game podcast work. We're not going to talk about it, so people don't tie us to it. But we've done it, and I mean,
I think a good starting kind of introductory point or question, just because I know we won't have a news section, or I mean an email section later and stuff like that, so I can slap stuff in here like that. But it's just interesting to think about, when was the first time you played a game that was truly classified as an indie game, and what made you pick that up, really?
An indie game. See, but I'm trying to, you know, decide whether or not some of the early games I played, like Zargon and Full Throttle, like the DOS games that I played on, like, the first few machines that I worked with, they were considered indie or not. I'm not sure.
Because I have a feeling most people's answers for this kind of thing are going to be playing games like on the iPhone and little games like that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hate bringing up Angry Birds or something like that. but
you're going to.
You know, just like starting off there and then kind of branching off, realizing this is a really cool market to be developing. I know for me it was the first ever Steam indie bundle that they released, and playing World of Goo in that was my first just like realizing that, hey, there's a genre out there called indie games.
Yep. So if any of you guys are just happened across this podcast and not quite sure what indie games are, when we say an indie game, we mean a game that's developed by an independent developer.
Or, as you said, there are going to be a few outliers who are developed by major developers, but were kind of developed in the style that indie games were. The easiest example I can think of right now is Bastion.
All right, we'll work through that some other time. Anyway, so how the way the show this is going to work is that we're going to say, hey, we're going to talk a little bit about some news, some interesting things that we, you know, like see that have been going on in the industry around us. We're going to talk about 3 games, and we'll talk about those a little bit later. We're going to address emails, which will be interesting because we won't have any for today. And then we'll let you all go. So the first is interesting things that have been going on. And Kevin, if you would like to go first... I think yours is more interesting than mine.
Okay, absolutely. All right. Yeah, well, we're starting off with kind of an adult topic then, but it's actually the release of a game that, depending on how big of a visual novel or something like that, is the release of a game called Katawa Shoujo, which literally translates to Disability Girls, which is a visual novel / erige game, meaning it has erotic content, so don't be downloading this. There's all sorts of 18-plus warnings on their website. But it's...
What is their website, Kevin?
Katawa-Shoujo.
All right, I'll put in the description.
Some.com. Katawa-shoujo.com. Yep, there we go.
I'm glad you remember that part.
Sorry. The developers kind of have an interesting story behind themselves. I don't know how many people are familiar with the image board 4chan, but the entire game kind of evolves from a sketch that was being discussed on this image board. That this guy had basically, you know, he's got an extra page in his doujinshi, I think, or whatever. I'm not sure. But it's some very, very, you wouldn't want your mother to find magazine. And the last page was featuring all of these kind of disabled girls, and it was just discussed about how awesome of a game this would be, or awesome of a visual novel this would be. So over the next 5 years, about 21, I think it is, developers, just in their free time, teamed together using a game called RenPy, which is a Python-based visual novel engine. And that's renpy.org if you want to check that out yourself. Threw together this game with all their own art. They did everything and released it for free.
For free?
For free. They have it up on with downloads only actually to their torrent, to torrent the game right now. But they have it for all three platforms. I know when you guys begin to hear news, you're going to notice a lot of trends out of me that I'm going to love to stress. Multi-platform support, and this one has obviously platform support for Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux, and obviously the Windows install was flawless, but I wanted to highlight on the fact that the Linux install was nothing. You just ran the script and it just worked, which was great. But the game itself, I love the studio's name. They decided to name themselves Four Leaf Studios, which, if you know the 4chan image logo, it has four leaves that are kind of representative of Yotsuba, which is another anime thing. The game itself is pretty complex. Just, I mean, if you're going to break into kind of the visual novel series with this game, it wouldn't be the worst choice you could make.
But would it be the best, Kevin?
Well, that all depends on if you're willing to play a game where one young man tries to pretty much date five other girls with disabilities.
Right.
But it's been considered, you know, there's a lot of hype because the game, let's see, back in 2009, the team had released the first act of the four-act game and had built up the most hype, basically, of any of these games I've ever seen in America. And it's just a great little story. And then it's been about a week since the game has been out, maybe 2 weeks when this gets out. But the team has announced their disbandment and that they will not be creating any more games after this.
Really?
Which is unfortunate.
Was it not successful or something?
I mean, how could it be successful? They're giving it away for free.
No, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even found a donate button on their website, really. But yeah, that's it. Katawa Shoujo, Four Leaf Studios. Go check it out if you really want to try something different, especially if you've just been playing the generic indie games. This really just falls under the category of not what people traditionally consider independent games, but independent because of the developer.
So, I'm assuming that you're finished.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the thing I thought was interesting to talk about, and maybe just because that this applies to me personally, but if you go to Mojang.com, Mojang being the developer that has developed Minecraft, you will see at the top as of today, which is January 10th, a post that was put up on January 8th. 2012. Happy New Year, everybody. By Daniel Kaplan, who, by the looks of all of his previous posts, is the guy managing at least the community side of the Pocket Edition, which is iOS and Android of Minecraft. And I'm going to read little bits and pieces. I'm not going to read the whole thing verbatim. He says, "Hey, everybody. Hope you had a great Christmas. Fun New Year's Eve. Minecraft Pocket Edition was released for iOS and Android in the middle of November." And then he talked about how he got some feedback from people about how they had bought the Minecraft Pocket Edition, and some people were really kind of disappointed because they wanted it to be more like survival, but they had made plans to make it more like creative. And as an owner of Pocket Edition, I mean, it's a little...
Yeah, wasn't it very, like, let's take the first Minecraft, the browser-based one, the mm-hmm. free version that everyone yeah. can go get and just slap it into an iPhone, yeah. basically.
Absolutely. And it's weird, the controls, because there's no jump button. So it's like you have to run towards a block, and then your character will just jump over it. It's kind of weird, because I'm kind of a jump and try to jump from one cliff to another and die sort of person in this game. So, I mean, I was a little upset. But they're going to make it more like survival mode, or at least some survival things in it. And so the update is supposed to be, and it's planned to be submitted by February the 8th. He says the Android market and the iOS app store must approve it, and then it'll be ours. And that the update will include a lot of background things to support the survival aspect of the game. You will see some neat looking animals and new blocks, but crafting will not be in the update since they need to redesign the GUI, and it needs some iteration and thinking and stuff like that. The great part is that the foundation for survival will be mostly done, and we can throw out much more fun updates.
I wonder how Notch and the people at Mojang feel about having to be having all their updates approved by the iOS and Android market. Because I remember one of the reasons, or people were asking, when Minecraft was released, why isn't this game on Steam? Mm-hmm. It seems like it, whatever. But he specifically said it's just way too restrictive of an update market. Which, if you follow, mainstream games, is the exact same reason Battlefield 3, the people at DICE or EA, whichever was pulling the strings, decided they weren't going to release their game for Steam. Which is an interesting point, I guess, to make, especially when you have a game that gets updated as much as Minecraft.
Well, here's the thing, too, because it's not like their main flagship project or product, yeah, because that's on the PC.
It feels like
the baby version again, all over again. Because, I know both you and I played the original creative 0.01 or 0.2, wherever it was, the version. And it was just sandbox, put blocks on top of each other, water was dumb sort of thing.
Water was great. They were spongy.
It was cool. But it feels like that all over again with a little bit more restriction because it has to be like one or two touch things. But apparently they're going to update it and make it a little bit more interesting. So, it's not going to be, it's not Minecraft handheld version. It's Minecraft a little bit different, and it's on a handheld. They also said that there's going to be doors and fences in this update, which I know people were really complaining about, apparently.
Doors and fences.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, it's going to basically be survival, at least at its core.
Fabulous.
Oh, interesting, right? We'll see how it goes.
I don't have a smartphone, personally. And this is where this market is exploding, which is why it's hard for me to keep up on, but...
It's fine. I have a smartphone. Proud smartphone owner. I'll keep you updated, Kevin. How about that?
Thanks, Chris.
No problem. I got you, buddy. Let's go into the next part since I'm finished babbling about this, which is the games. But we're going to talk about the games we've been playing recently a little bit first before we get into the big three that we're going to talk about. So, Kevin, what have you been playing in the past, 2 weeks since the new year started, indie-wise?
I've been absorbed in a little bit of Katara Shoujo. I'm avoiding playing it because it's going to get sad real fast.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is there any way to lose that game?
There's been people who... See, your ultimate objective is, right, to get with one of the girls and basically play through that love story with them.
Okay.
But there is an option where you fail to get all the girls and instead... get with your next door neighbor, kind of, because you're in like a dorm like situation, and you have a picnic with whiskey and him on the roof.
What?
And a lot of people have been calling that losing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. So why is he in this situation with all these disabled girls?
Okay. So a little more background to the story itself.
Because now I'm interested.
Well, he doesn't have like a traditional, I guess. I don't know. Traditional disability in the sense that all the other girls do, right? He has a heart condition known as arrhythmia, I think, or something. It causes irregular beating in the heart. And so he was kind of just thrown into this school with all these girls, and he's got to pick which one kind of he wants to date. You're supposed to walk into it wanting to date these girls and wanting to kind of listen to a love story, I guess, in a sense. Okay, right? It's a lot of reading.
The art style's anime, correct?
Yes.
Anime-esque?
Yeah. Interesting way they cut down on a lot of the drawings was they took pictures of, I think, just some school and some different buildings and just kind of threw some photo bucket art, Photoshop, like basic, a filters just over them to kind of make them look more hand-drawn, and it was such a clever way to cut down on the work they had to do. I was like, that's great. I've been playing The Witcher. I've been just slowly cruising through that ever since I bought it.
The first one. So how's that combat?
It's fine. I'm fine with the combat. Yeah.
Okay. It's structured.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed that I haven't had all the sex options. I'm not all about sex, god damn it.
Getting them just, trading this cards.
This is just unfortunate, these two games
Kevin,
I'm talking about.
Come on. But, I mean, we'll talk about your game later that you're going to really talk about.
But Geralt is a badass, and I just love him as a character. And it, when I play this game, it feels like I'm playing all of these... Just so much from a Western RPG that is so high budget and everything. I mean, it's just with the occasional like shadow glitch and stuff like that that you really notice that, oh my god, I'm actually playing a game that was developed by some independent developer no one's ever heard of in Poland.
I mean, yeah. Plus the soundtrack is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a very immersive game.
Righto.
So anything else? Well, so since Christmas-ish time, I bought a ton of indie games from the Steam Indie Bundles, which were fantastic. But most recently, in the past, I don't know, week-ish or so, I played Super Meat Boy quite a lot, actually. A little bit. Yeah, I mean, I took my dad's Xbox controller and put them on my computer. And so I actually beat the levels to get the kid, the warp zone, which is the hardest part of that game, apparently. Those like super impossible levels. Do you know what I'm talking about, Kevin?
I'm not praising you for being a sadist, if that's what you're asking me to do.
No, I'm just I want to know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Okay. Yeah, so anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, first of all, Super Meat Boy is like a 2D platformer. It's like the craziest, hardest, yeah, 2D platformer ever. And you can own these things called warp zones if you get to certain warps and then the levels quick enough. And there's one in the last chapter that is one of the last chapters that's crazy. And you unlock a character called the kid by doing these. And so this kid has a double jump and stuff. And so what you're doing is you're jumping down like these really thin, narrow hallways and trying to wall jump between spikes. And you have to get it just right. Otherwise, you die, and you go back to the beginning of the level, and you restart everything. And it must have taken me, I don't know, maybe a good 5 hours with a shower break, and, you know, I get up and walk around, go outside and get some fresh air break in order to do the three levels. It was the most frustrating and yet the most satisfying thing I've ever done in the past, I don't know, while, game-wise. And then... I mean, other than Meat Boy, I've been playing some Minecraft by myself, doing some single player, because it's nice not getting screwed with by people in multiplayer every once in a while. And, yeah. I mean, it's nice. Just digging holes, man. Digging.
Okay, your holes.
That's Minecraft. And then I played a little bit of Terraria, which is just 2D Minecraft. But I mean, I'll get back to that game eventually. It's just not as much as Meat Boy.
So you've been reliving your childhood in video games.
Yeah, it's been nice. It's been nice. But other than that, I mean, I've been pretty busy with other things, so Meat Boy has been the majority of it, besides the other game I'm going to talk about. And okay. Let's just go
into
that.
Trying to hide them like there's something special.
All right, so the three games that we're going to talk about, I'm going to say the name of your game wrong, Kevin. What's that game?
For the Awesome.
Okay, which is the sequel to...
A Reckless Disregard for Gravity.
And it's not really like a sequel, it's like a spiritual successor, right?
It's like a sequel clued in your first game.
So it's like a remake, like an HD remake?
Yes, and exactly.
Okay, alright.
With another game.
And then I'm going to talk about Orcs Must Die, and then we're going to talk about Limbo together. So if you would take... the floor, Kevin. I'd love to hear about this amazing game. See what it is there.
Okay. So when I had first seen A Reckless Disregard for Gravity, I thought, damn, that is a cool idea. And I bought it, which I think is kind of ironic considering I'm not the kind of person who would ever even think about skydiving. But the game revolves around... a futuristic setting where buildings have like fallen from the sky, and I'm not sure if science had created them or if they just kind of appeared and then science created human civilization around them, but basically cities have been built in the sky, and a new sport kind of develops where you use a wingsuit and just jump through the skies, falling in between these buildings, and you score points. The entire objective is to score the most points by crashing through point plates, which, you know, are basically just like maybe a ring that you would do in, I don't know, in some other game. But and then getting hugs, which are flying very close to a building, and kisses, which is yeah, some lip
you
action,
a giant
bro.
Bear?
No, you're not a bear. I don't even know. Bears don't have lips, really.
They're teddy bears.
Which is a kisses you get by just kind of tapping really close to it, not actually touching them, but just flying really close to it once. So you get one, and then you get the hugs for staying close to it. And there's a lot of other scoring methods that the game kind of integrates in, like a glow-in-the-dark flip-it glove, they call it, where you give the offensive hand gestures to your protesters who don't like the sport, and kind of like thumbs up and like, you know, cool signs to your fans, basically. And then there's other stuff like spray cans. You can spray pink graffiti inside of municipal buildings. And then you get like another power-up where it's once per level you slam like an espresso and slow down time, and it's just a lot of like stuff that really makes the levels way more complex in the end, and really makes getting a higher score. And there's a lot more to think about rather than just like in Super Meat Boy, where there'd be one path to really do it, and there's only slight variations that you could make to get that kind of ultimate score. Well, the first one was kind of had this this certain humor about it, and it's not like a dark humor, it's not like a British based humor. I can't even describe what the humor is. It feels very original, but in between just your levels, where you'd hear a radio caster called Nevin come on and give some of the most enlightening newscasts I've ever heard. Which just kind of reminded you of the environment you're supposed to kind of put yourself in, where you're a skydiver. Since there's no real campaign where you like have a name or something like that, you just kind of are playing levels and getting points. But they were nice little segments to throw you back in. So the second game for the Awesome, which I'm really covering here, included that entire thing with high-def graphics and a few more special effects. But it also included another section to the game where it had a set of levels that just had a very high required skill. So the buildings were tighter, so you often would end up smacking onto the roof of something instead, or hitting crosswalks and just dying, basically. And they'd be harder to score ultimate points on, or your ultimate landing zone in the end would be very, very tiny. And they're very challenging. So if you were a fan of the first game for more than, like, for the challenge of it, the second game just adds all of that challenge you could want.
Okay, so you mentioned landing zones.
Yeah.
So how does your character land?
A parachute.
Oh, I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. You deploy at the last minute.
How do these characters get up to the top? Are they like in planes, or?
You just kind of start. I mean, there's not a whole lot of background story. I'm sure there is in the developers' heads, but it doesn't really explain to you.
Well, if we see an MMO version, I'm sure.
I thought the game, because here's the plot of the second game, which a lot of these plots are explained within the monologue at the very beginning during the startup screen, which I was tempted to quote but decided that was a terrible idea. Just go YouTube them or something. But these monologues are just great in describing the games. And the second one kind of sets it up in Ah for the Awesome, where the sport of base jumping has kind of been outlawed, and now you're kind of jumping to evade arrest from the police, yet you're still, you know, kind of trying to get your adrenaline kick, and you're like a revolutionary, and all your, you know, jumps are about freedom, and, you know, 9.1 meters per second is like the speed of revolution and stuff like that. Yeah.
All right.
It's
okay, that's cool. That's pretty cool. And it's almost poetic.
Yeah. And then the in between the radio shows, instead of being replaced by a comedy, are replaced by a more like serious reports of base jumpers being arrested and things like that, which just adds to the kind of more seriousness of those jumps and how much more challenging they are.
Did you ever play a game called Jet Set Radio Future on the Xbox?
I've heard of this game.
Okay, this is just really reminded me of it.
The graphics?
I haven't really seen the graphics, but if you're telling
me... Speaking of the music, I loved it. I have friends who play with the music actually turned completely off, and they put on their own tracks, which I could see it working because the music isn't like integral to the game, unlike some other games that Dejuban, the creators of this game, have made. They created another game called 1-2-3 Kick It, Drop That Beat Like an Ugly Baby, which is kind of like a combination of this, some shooter elements, and
rhythm game.
You import your own music, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. And the studio actually right now is, I think, creating, like, combining Ah for the Awesome and that game, Drop the Beat Like an Ugly Baby, into one game. Okay. And I think on their website they have some beta downloads that you could just go download, as well as some of their older games, because they're actually a really old game company that's been around since 1999 and just been creating games, and none of them have really been quite as big as until
all right, well, good.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah. One thing that did disappoint me just a little bit was in the original game there was an expansion pack called Brutal Concussion. They did not remake the five levels they created for that, five or ten, I think it was five, levels they created for that game in the sequel for the Awesome, even though they have a nice little DLC market where they're obviously going to come out with DLC in the future, just in the form of more maps. And the first thing they did was a free batch of DLC for the Christmas kind of like game things where you got, you know, lumps of coal or whatever on Steam so that you could win nothing, essentially. But
Yeah.
It's not biased at all, but those levels were absolutely fun. And if you ever get a chance to buy this game and read through the achievements, just the achievements are hilarious and just saturated in their ridiculous form of humor. So all in all, really fun game. It's challenging. It's one of those games you want to play if you don't really care about the story, but you just want to, you know, play a game where you can kind of boost your EP and about scores and stuff like that, and yet still have a creative way to get through and get that higher score.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. So the game that I decided to do was Orcs Must Die. And basically this is a game set in a fantasy world where you play the apprentice of a wizard, and you're trying, it's like a really cool tower defense game, third person tower defense game, and you run around as this guy in armor, he's got a crossbow, and your wizard, I don't know, master, teacher, guide has died because he slipped on some kobold blood and split his head open on the floor. And what you're doing is you're defending these portals from orcs that are just pouring in through like these doors that come in waves and stuff. And so what you do is the game starts out and you get like a spike trap, a tar trap to slow them down, and then you with your crossbow on the ground. And it's fun. I mean, you set the traps and then you're like, all right, cool, bring on the horde. And then the orcs like run out and they're just like saying stupid stuff about how like they don't know where they are. Kill the human, the last one to the portal is a smelly human. I mean, it's humorous, it's funny. And the your character, oh, go ahead.
The way I saw the gameplay, kind of, and answer me this if it's correct, but kind of like a, it was definitely a tower defense elements, but almost in a corridor shooter setting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's a third person. If it was first person shooter, I think it would be a much different game with a much more emphasis on you being more of a shooter. But the third person aspect kind of forces you to focus on the towers a little bit more, I think. At least subconsciously. Anyway, so like you go on, and as you beat levels and things like that, you get more and more traps, and you get like furnace traps, and as people run by, like they open up and shoot flames out and stuff, and you can buy archers to put on ledges, and then they start adding in multiple portals for orcs to run into, and then multiple doors that orcs will come out of, flying units, things like that. You get spells. It's really interesting. It's very dynamic. I'm a big fan of the art style. The music's pretty fun. The only problem that I have with it is it's only single player and not multiplayer. I think it would have a very interesting multiplayer aspect to it. Very competitive and fun and stuff like that. There are
a lot of people have compared it to a sort of single player, a more complex single player version of Dungeon Defenders.
Yes, I was about to make that comparison. And that's very, very true. And because of that, it runs very smoothly for a single-player game, and there's a lot more physics things that you can do with it. Like, you can have bouncing traps and pushing traps, and then you can use wind magic to knock them off. Not something that you would really see in Dungeon Defenders, because too much of that would really slow down, like, the action. Since there's, like, four people going on, and it's difficult to have that much going on at once.
I'm assuming, like, obviously there are different types of orcs, right? And then different types of traps that do better versus different... Are there flying orcs?
There's no flying orcs. The things that fly... I know. The things that fly are little itty-bitty dragons that, like, if they get close to you, will, like, puke fireballs on you. And they're adorable and annoying as hell.
But they must die.
Yeah, but they have to die. They're just like the orcs, you know, they all have to die. So, like, you'll have bigger orcs come by, and then the smaller orcs. There's some gnolls that run fast, some kobolds that run real fast. It's cool. And then later on in the game, they have, like, mountable ballistas. It's interesting.
Okay.
It actually gets pretty difficult. I was surprised how difficult it gets. But if you keep trying with new strategies, the different combinations of traps... You'll be fine. But yeah, it's pretty fun. I'd recommend picking it up off of Steam. Orcs Must Die! Okay, so we both played...
Limbo.
I don't know if you want to give a quick synopsis or something.
Yeah, Well, why don't you tell them what Limbo is, and then I'll talk about...
Okay, well, Limbo is obviously an indie game, although we're going to be talking about it. It's black and white, and basically the story is that you are a young boy going into a forest and trying to find your sister. And all that you have, controls-wise, are left and right, jump, and action, which is left control. You go through, and there are, like, minor puzzles, timing, puzzles.
Entire game is puzzles.
All right, it's puzzles.
I've been stumped on those for some time. We're still called a minor.
All right, I had a few issues too, and you had to help me with a couple of them. But there's a lot. It sounds extremely simple, and yet they've made a very complex and artistic creative game off of this.
Yeah, so the developer was a Danish team called Playdead. And the interesting thing about this game is it was originally produced for the Xbox Live Arcade, or released, not produced, and then later thrown out onto OS X, the Mac App Store, and then Steam, and before all that, PlayStation 3. But it was originally first an Xbox 360, Xbox Live Arcade game, which probably means it's programmed in the XML.
Right.
Which is just, it's interesting because that it's interesting to see where that engine can be thrown afterwards. As you can see, it's just within the release dates were just, I mean, actually the first release date on the Xbox 360 was in July, the end of July in 2010. And it actually didn't reach Steam until, they have two release dates for Steam. And then on the Wikipedia page, I'm not sure why, but August 2nd. A lot of people had heard, like, I had heard about this game from some of the people who were enjoying this on the iPhone, actually, before I ever got a chance to even buy it for my computer.
Wait, the iPhone?
Yeah, in the Mac App Store. I'm 90% sure he's talking about the iPhone, because he doesn't have a Mac.
Well, let me do... Keep talking. I'm going to do a little bit of research.
It's created this Playdead company a ton of money. I'm quoting Wikipedia here with $7.5 million in revenue. That's dollars, U.S. dollars, and it's the third highest selling game on the Xbox Live Arcade back in 2010.
I'm not seeing it in the App Store. I think it's just available on Mac, and the Mac App Store is a kind of like a Steam, but for Mac users. Not that
Mac users I know what the Mac App Store is.
So it's not on the iPhone. It's not an iOS game.
Whatever.
But I could see why I'd make the money there too.
Yeah.
And it's a simple enough game that you think that it actually could probably be ported to iOS.
Yeah.
What did you like most about the game? The gameplay itself.
The ending.
Really?
The ending was by far my favorite. And I am going to spoiler it up a little bit.
Go for it.
So, you know. Don't listen. Close your ears, as my first grade teacher used to always tell me. Yeah, if you don't want to hear this.
Like 5 minutes.
Not 5 minutes. But the final puzzles in the game involve, I love how as the game progressed, different elements were always introduced. You use them for the puzzles, and then they were kind of thrown out or just kind of trickled out of style. And I thought that was a great, great format for the game, because it made it so they never got too complex, and he never made like an all-encompassing level that just required you use kind of everything that happened. And so you kind of walked from area to area to area. But I was sitting there thinking, as I'm getting closer to the end of this game, I'm like, how is a game like this going to end? And I mean, a few games, you know, have had that thing before, like it's a very mellow game and you can't really build up to an ending. But the final kind of puzzle piece in the game involved these switches that change the direction of gravity, much like in a VVV sense, where you flipped up and down, but a lot more limited because you had to throw switches with the action button in your character. And at the very, very end of the game, where you end up kind of flipping up and pulling that elaborate, like, you fall down and the timing, and then you fly sideways. And the way that it looks is you're just going to fly, you know, and smack against the ground or something, but you end up just nailing into a wall of water that is held sideways. And the game just ends up slowing down as you traverse through this watery-like substance. But gravity is also still pulling you down towards the ground. And you watch a little protagonist here, who doesn't have a name, tumble across the ground very slowly up until you finally get up again, just like you did in the many times in the game, actually. I don't know how this boy doesn't have, like, a concussion. Walk towards the ending sequence. But that was just by far one of the best ways to end this game, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was very creative. But, I mean, going back to, this is something that I feel that the game did very well, something that you brought up before, which is that they brought on these puzzle elements that slowly kind of, as you put it, went out of style. And it's cool that an indie game like this is able to keep the gameplay very fresh in a very simple format, and it never got boring. It was always interesting. I was always excited to go to the next puzzle because I never knew what I was going to find, and I think that's something to be commended, especially in this genre of game.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I can definitely see how in another game like World of Goo, how it changed up the gameplay with different goo balls or something like that, or the different level kind of settings. This game did both those. So not only did the setting change, but the puzzle elements did, like we were talking about. And yeah, I think the combo of the two not only kept the gameplay fresh, but it just visually fresh.
Right, yeah. And it nothing got old. I can't get over how cool that is.
Yeah, it's absolutely cool. I'm actually going to take a gander at how much I logged on this game to get an idea of...
Yeah, it's not the world's longest game, but...
No, I beat it with a lot of downtime in 4.1 hours, but granted, I only paid about $250 for it.
Right, because it does go on sale relatively often on Steam, correct?
Yes, which is the only place on Windows you can buy it for. Buy it.
Right.
Through.
Yep. Again, the name of the game is Limbo, and it's fantastic. We both recommend it.
Mm-hmm. And look for it on
Steam,
Xbox Live Marketplace. I think they have a retail version for the Xbox 360, PlayStation Network, Steam, and the Mac App Store.
Yep, which is not iOS.
Right.
Right, right. Okay, so, well, we would be answering emails here, but we don't have any since, you know, there's no way for us to really talk to anybody yet, except for this right here. So send emails if you have any questions or suggestions of games that we should talk about, or if you have any questions about games that we have talked about, input, anything, suggestions for the show. And
requests, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What you want to see. We'd much rather morph the show around the user base than force you guys to like the way we do this the first time we do it.
Absolutely. You can go ahead and send those emails to thebitbend@gmail.com. That's just thebitbend@gmail.com. It's pretty self-explanatory. And we'll respond to you and we'll talk about it on the show. So yeah. And with that, I mean, we're just going to pretty much waltz on out. So we'll be here in 2 weeks doing another show. We're gonna try to make this bi-weekly.
Yeah, and in the off weeks you can expect maybe a video or something else on
the
BitBend site, and we'll try to throw some news up there. But if you email news, we'll probably put it up as well. So
yep, this is all a work in progress, so bear with us. So until 2 weeks from now, see you later.